Hello, this is Joe McGee. You know, we've been doing seminars across the country for years. Seminars on marriage, parenting, men, money, and family. We want to encourage you to email us and let us know if this podcast has helped you. Or maybe you have joined us live at one of our seminars. If you have a testimony, you just want to tell us what God's doing in your life, please email us at mail@joemcgeeministries.com, or you can contact us through our website, joemcgeeministries.com. There you will find helpful articles and tools to help you grow in God, your marriage, and your family. I love you guys. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Hey, everybody. This is Joe and Angel. We're back for another Mailbag Monday.
Thanks, everyone, for being with us today. Now, don't forget, you can submit your questions by direct messaging us on Facebook or Instagram, or you can email us at mail@joemcgeeministries.com.
Let's go ahead and look at some of the questions that we have received this week.
Okay, so the first question is, my spouse constantly speaks her mind, but I usually keep stuff to myself because I know if I bring it up, we're just going to have a fight. I know I'm burying stuff that's going to eventually come out, but I usually just want to keep the peace.
Whoa, we've all been there. Everybody that's ever been married has been there. But what you realize, the longer you avoid it, the bigger the mushroom grows. It's like those giant mushrooms in the forest. Well, that's cute. Well, come back next day. It's not cute anymore. It's bigger. It keeps growing. And it's going to blow up eventually. You got to learn how to just take it one day at a time and don't let it go by. It's like every time something would come up, like, well, I remember the first time when I got married, I thought, I love my wife. She loved me, and we hugged and kissed. And all of a sudden, a few weeks in our marriage, she started mentioning stuff. I thought, well, I think that's stupid. But, you know, if I mention it, she gets upset, so I'll avoid that. And so a few days later, she mentioned something else, and I mentioned something that kind of upset her. I said, well, I'll avoid that. And so I'm about 3 or 4 months in the marriage. I'm avoiding everything. I got more roadblocks between us. I don't know when I can talk, not talk. I'm not said anything. I thought, well, that doesn't mean it that we can't talk. I was just wimpy in the way I was brought up, I guess. Like, well, I just want peace. Well, I just do anything for some peace. And I had grown men that I worked with, you know, at the plant. Well, I know how to keep peace. Just avoid hard subjects and get your mouth full of food and go to bed early, get up early and go to work early. That way you don't fight. And I thought, well, that's just stupid. We're supposed to be problem solvers. So it was at church where I heard that, you know, God puts people together. You know, like as iron strikes iron, so the countenance of a friend. Well, when iron strikes iron, sparks are flying. God gives you somebody that's not like you. Well, and people would always say, Mr. McGee, we just got married. We're so alike. We are so alike. We like the same food and the same movies. We like the same car. No, you're blind as a bat and dumb as dirt. You're not alike. God puts opposites together. Mm-hmm. And it's because he looked at Adam. He said, you need help. And he made Eve. He didn't make another Adam. He made Eve. Something totally different, that thought different, thinks different, processes different. Two are better than one, not because you agree, but because you see the problem from a different viewpoint. So eventually you're going to have to engage one another. So some people do speak their mind. Well, you're going to have to learn how to speak yours and just say real calm, be slow to speak, slow to wrath, quick to hear. You stay real calm. You say something like, well, sir, I just think that's stupid.
And sparks will really fly.
Well, sir, I don't think that's going to work because if we do that, this is going to happen. And if you stay calm, it diffuses about 90% of that stuff. But when you stay quiet all the time, it's going to blow up eventually. And then you're going to be sitting in the counseling room, and they're going to say, well, you never said anything. Well, mm-hmm. I never could because you ran your mouth all the time, and I didn't know what to say. By the time I thought of an answer for this thing, you said something else. I'm having to think of an answer for that thing. Yeah. And men, we think slower. We just don't think real quick. Many a time I've heard my wife say something. I've been in a room, you know, 5 minutes later, I thought, ooh, I should have said this. Oh, I should have said this because my wife is smarter than me. She could talk faster, think quicker. And so I realized I can't wait any longer. I got to speak my mind. Like, well, I think so. I said, well, sugar, I don't think we're going to be able to do that. You know? And she said, well, why not? Well, if we do that, this is going to happen. This is going to happen. And my kids would pull that on me as they got older. Well, Dad, you can make that new rule, but if you do, this is going to happen. This is going to happen. I said, okay, that's a dumb rule. Forget that. Two are better than one because they can help each other grow up. But if you're just sitting quiet all the time, you're running on just one ball tire, and it's not going to last very long.
Yeah, and I have to say, when I was young and I first got married, I was terribly guilty of shutting down my ex-husband. So much so, to the point that it eventually was a key factor in the demise of our marriage. it wasn't the entire reason, but it was part of it. And I have to take responsibility for that, that I didn't allow him to have a peaceful or safe place. Yeah, exactly. To view his opinion. I just would shut him down. And I have regrets for that.
Sure.
I know another couple that he traveled a lot. And the mother was so used to being the entire parenting couple that when he would come home, she wouldn't allow him to take his
Good
place
point.
In the family.
Good point.
And it finally, she pushed him and pushed him and pushed him. And if you push somebody hard enough, they're going to eventually go away.
Yep.
And he did. And she has massive regrets now, realizing that she had a large part of that. So it is a serious. It's easier to slay it when it's a baby than it is when it's a giant.
No, nobody tries to destroy their marriage. Nobody tries to destroy a relationship. It just happens a little at a time because there's so many people that travel now. I grew up in a time when most dads worked at a factory.
Uh-huh.
Same place every day, same hour every day for 30 years. Well, that doesn't happen anymore. The industrial age died. It's the information age. So many people are traveling. So a typical mom, she's running everything. I mean, It happened in our family when I started traveling years ago. Denise made all the decisions. Can't ask Dad. Dad's not here. Mom's doing this. She's dropping us off. She tells us where we're going to go. She's packing our lunch. So when Dad came home, I'm the outsider. And so I'd come home. I remember the first time when I first started traveling, I said, you better do this. And said, well, I'm going to have to ask Mom about that. You don't have to ask Mom. I'm here. And my wife would say, well, wait a second. You don't understand. This is now happening, and this is happening. I thought, okay, I don't know everything. I've been gone, so I cannot make quality decisions. So I had to learn to slow down. I said, sugar, I think we got a situation here. This is what I think we need to do. Yes, no, or you don't understand this, you know this. So you got to learn how to start talking to one another, or you're going to blow up, and it's not going to go good.
And if you can't get it resolved between you, I mean, I would really – this is a situation I would definitely recommend counseling.
Yes.
Because it's something that's important enough that it can grow into a bigger thing.
It will.
That I would definitely – your
good.
Communication and your trust – I mean, when you lose that, there's the foundation of the marriage is gone.
We used to teach families that all wars start with words. All divorces start with words. All affairs start with words.
Yep.
Life and death's in the power of the tongue. You can't just say anything that hits your brain. You're trying to solve a problem, not win an argument.
Yeah.
You're not trying to win an argument. You're trying to solve a problem.
And there are some things that are not worth peace.
No.
And that would definitely be one of them.
Yes.
All right. So I know kids normally gravitate to each other, no matter if it's at school or where it's at. I'm seeing that both my kids seem to pick friends that I would never want for them. I want to teach them what to look for so I don't have to constantly be the gatekeeper, but they are young, and I don't know how to get the message across.
Well, that's a big one. People have told me before, so, well, you can't pick your children's friends. I said, well, biblically, you're commanded to. I will tell you who your friends are and are not, who you will have over at the house, who you want, where you're going to go and not go. So we had to have some basic rules. You know, even God had to come up with the Ten Commandments. He knew they wouldn't keep them, but he had to start with it. I'm going to give you these 10 laws. You're not going to be able to keep them, but you don't know that yet. So I'm going to make them just so you show you can't do this without me. And so we had to make some rules for the house. And so we had like our three basic rules. No talking back to mom and dad, no fighting your brothers and sisters, no telling a lie. Those were the three rules I kept for how many 8 years of parenting, 80-something years of parenting.
Mm-hmm.
I just had three rules because, you know, you'd make a new rule every day. New rule, yeah. You've not been 12 before. You've not been 13 before. New rule, new rule. And they couldn't keep up with it. I couldn't remember the rules I made. So we just had to narrow it down to, we got three basic rules in the house. We need you to keep these. If you keep these, life's going to go really good. But when we got into the social aspect, that's one thing when you're a young child at home, and we lived way out in the country. I didn't have any neighbors. There wasn't anybody to mess with. So it was at school that we're starting to have some challenges. So like, where do you talk to your friends at? Well, at the locker, at lunch, on the playground. You know, we have a long study hall. It's like, okay, so I had to start making some new little adjustments. Okay, number one, no more study hall. You take a course.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm sending you to school, you need to study. You can study when you get home. You're not going to sit in the study because you're getting in trouble all the time because you're talking and laughing and telling jokes, passing notes. So trying to restrict this. And then I had to start doing a class on friendship. And so I had my kids sit down one time and said, listen, I'm going to give you a blank piece of paper, and I want you to write down who you would like to marry. Now, the kids, they're not even junior high yet. When you grow up and you get older, I want you to write it. when you get married, who do you want to marry? What do you want them to look like or be like or look like or how much money you want them to make or where you want them to live? And so they would just make stuff up. And it, and we'd, I'd try to not get laugh or get, you know, get tickled about it. I said, well, let's put that in. And next year, we're going to pull that out again. So we used to do January 1st, the first year. Hey, guys, we're going to sit down and we're going to write down our list. What are you looking for when you get married? And so so we would do it. And then by the time we hit the teenage years and we're able to date, first time they bring home somebody said, well, I'm sorry, for the last 8 years, you said you were looking for somebody like this. That didn't match your list. Yeah, but they were so friendly. And they asked me out. And they sent next to me. I said, but they're not on your list. And you had to set them up, realize you're not looking for that. You said you were looking for this, which means this is nothing but emotion.
You know, I had a what I called a yard dog philosophy for my kids. And I would tell it to them all the time. And I'd say, you know, there's a difference between a yard dog and a house dog. A house dog, you cuddle in the evening. You pet them while you're watching TV. If you're heartbroken, you just hold them and tell them everything. You let them know everything that's going on in your life. But a yard dog, you kind of throw a bone at and wave at them as you're going out to the car. So when my kids would come home and they'd say, well, so-and-so did so-and-so. And I'd say, are they a yard dog or a house dog? Because you have very few house dogs in your life. And I said, most people are yard dogs. Most people are. So, but the ones that you embrace, the ones you bring in close, those house dogs, they're usually lifelong friends.
We talk to kids about, you know, well, Dad, I got a new friend. I said, well, let's look at that now, because there's a lot of scriptures on friends. There's more scriptures on friends and friendship than there are on heaven and hell. And the Bible says that a friend is somebody who will die for you, not get you killed. So what has this friend done for you? What do they do for you? Mm. You know, they tell you the truth? Well, they just like, I like hanging out. They tell funny stories, and we gossip a lot. So, well, what is it they've done for you? Well, I don't understand. You know, they gave the answers to the test. No, that's not going to help. You're supposed to study. That right. Friend's not. And so I'll just have to stay real calm and just ask questions. Jesus always asks questions. Mm-hmm. Just like, what have they done for you? I don't know. That's not a friend. That's an enemy.
Right.
That's somebody who's trying to get something from and not be something for you. And I said, the Bible says if you want to have friends, you got to be friendly. So I'm going to teach you how to be one before you can get one. Because people aren't just going, I wish I had a friend. Well, you don't have one because you're not friendly. You know, you either got bad breath or you don't want to carry on a conversation or you talk weird. You got to learn how to be friendly. Most people are only concerned about one thing, themselves.
Yeah.
So talk about them. So we try to empower them in their social life. Otherwise, somebody's going to take you out. Somebody's going to take you to the wrong place.
My daughter had this friend that every time she'd invite her over, my son and I would just go, oh, no. And she was just a very self-absorbed person. And my daughter, we just like, what is it with you? Why do you hang on to this relationship? And in retrospect, it was really because of her self-esteem was low. And as my daughter got into college and her self-esteem blossomed, that friendship faded. So, you know, a lot of times you have to look at what is the core that's causing them to go after those kinds of friends.
Sometimes you got to watch your kids to get a savior complex,
mm-hmm.
because they're wearing stray dogs, stray cats, and stray friends. Well, Dad, nobody likes them at school.
Mm-hmm.
Or are you this cool friend now? What do you say? I want to be friendly to everybody, but you don't invite everybody home. You don't eat lunch with everybody.
Right.
You know, Jesus went through that whole thing in 2 Timothy. He's talking about in the last days, perilous times will come. Apostle Paul is writing. Perilous times will come. People will be lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God, heady, high-minded, truce breakers, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection. He goes to this long list of people, and he closes by saying, stay away from such people.
Mm.
Well, I thought we were Christian. Don't we love everybody? Yes, we do love everybody. If they're thirsty, we'll give them water. If they're hungry, we will feed them. If they're sick, we'll nurture them back to health. If they're in prison, we will visit with them. But the same New Testament says we're also not going to spend spare time or eat lunch with them either, because you'll become like who you hang around.
Absolutely.
So we did a lot of teaching about what friends are, why they're very important, why you need to learn how to be one. But a friend is somebody who'll die for you, not who'll get you killed. So don't get caught up by somebody's just kind words or sappy words, because the devil, we would tell them, the devil does not have horns or a pitchfork. The devil is the single most beautiful creature God ever made. And he's going to lure you with words and looks and sounds and smells, but that's not good. Is not necessarily God.
Mm-mm.
You got to be very careful.
You do, and I've told my kids, I choose my friends. They don't choose me.
Thank you. Bottom line, that is good.
Yeah,
is
and good. So I'm very careful about who I allow in my inner circle because I want iron sharpening iron.
Yes.
And you just don't open your heart to anybody.
No.
So
don't empty your whole brain on the table because you don't know who they are.
Exactly.
Well, Dad, they promised they wouldn't tell. I said, honey, are they your friend? Well, I thought they were. Nobody's a friend. Unless they'll die for you, they're not your friend. Quit telling everything that's in your mind to everybody you meet. Stop that. Let your yes be yes, your no be no, all else proceed from the evil one.
Very good. Okay. My wife's backseat driving is making me nuts. We often get into fights, and I don't want to get angry, but I also don't want to be married to my driving instructor. I got this.
Go ahead.
Drive separately.
That would be a really good answer because we don't know exactly the situation. Maybe you're not driving too good and you're scaring her. So that I don't know, but separate driving would be the simplest answer.
Well, the reason I said that is because my ex-husband was a very distracted driver and it would stress me out. So we literally would get up, be going to work at the same place and drive separately. It bought peace into the situation. Yeah,
and that has carried off somewhat into the second marriage because you are verbal when we're driving, very calm, very quiet, but I do need to drive better. I'm working on some things I've learned because I've been on my own for so long.
Okay. Just to be honest, as we were driving here today.
Yes.
I said, yes, you got to chill with the brakes because my stomach is not feeling that great.
Yeah.
And every time we rent.
Stop, start.
Every time we rent a car, we have those few moments where the brakes are an issue. And I have a little tender stomach.
Yes,
so.
We're getting better. We're learning.
I guess I am a little guilty of this.
We're learning.
I came up with this rule that we have not kept yet, but I said maybe I should drive in town and you drive.
Yes, and we need to enforce that rule. That would be a great rule. Yes, sir. I agree with that. For everybody in here, I do agree with that rule.
Since we have one car, we can't drive separately. Okay.
Well, that wraps up this week's Monday Mailbag. Before we go, we just want to thank all of our ministry partners for your faithful giving and for your prayers. It is because of you that we are able to continue reaching people and changing lives. If you'd like to become a partner with us or even give a one-time gift, please go to our website, joemcgeeministries.com, and click the Donate tab. There you can give and help us reach more and more people with this message.
Hey, thanks everybody for your great questions. Please make sure and tell your friends about the podcast so they can get blessed too. Remember, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we'll be right here.
God bless you.